My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey and I am your host for today's program. So if you've been to the website recently, you would have noticed there have been a few changes as we're refocusing our efforts on this program away from the kind of exploration and more towards delivering and providing resources and tools for you to discover life, passion and meaning for yourself. My guest on today's show is Jane Duncan Rogers. Now, you could say her job title is a death coach, but that may be being a bit flippant. Jane runs an organization, which is a non-profit organization called Before I Go Solutions. And the organization is completely focused on helping people create end-of-life plans. Creating a good end-of-life plan is all about focusing on the time that you have left. Now, for an oldie like me, that's probably quite important. And for younger people, that's might be not so important. But having a proper plan about how we leave this earth allows us to focus and value the time that we have here. Unfortunately, in Western society, we have put death in the cupboard. We rely on the hospitals, the doctors, and the funeral directors to hide it away from us. And because we don't deal with death very well, we find it very hard to actually deal with the consequences of it from every aspect, from an aspect of preparing for it, or from even the aspect of dealing with it when a family member passes. Now, Jane comes to this from a very practical aspect. Her partner her partner had cancer, and Jane went through the process of nursing him to his death and went through the process of preparing him for his death. And it wasn't something that she knew anything about at the time, but there's a story attached to that. It is an amazing story listening to Jane, and it's an amazing piece of work that she does, and really, really valuable. So as it sits within life, passion and business, yes, it does sit very, very well. Because when, as I said already, as I alluded to, when we value the time that we have on this earth, it's only then that we start making the best use of it. So I hope you enjoy the conversation with Jane Duncan Rogers. I have got a great friend on the line with me today. I have known Jane Duncan Rogers for probably 6 or 7 years, maybe even longer. And we were Toastmasters together. I've always known Jane to be passionate about everything she does. And her life has had some major changes over the last few years. And I'll leave Jane to tell you about that one. But so, Jane, you know what life, passion and business is about. Tell me, how did you get to this point here?
Thank you, Paul. It's good to be here today. Yes, how did I get to be here? Well, of course, there's a long version and a short version, but to keep it a little bit shorter, I was working and had been for many, many years in the psychotherapeutic field and in the field of personal growth and as a small business coach, when in 2011, my husband died having had a year with cancer, and everything changed at that point. And of course, everything changed. Things do change when somebody dies, somebody close to you dies. What happened for me was that I underestimated completely the effect that would have on my work. I wasn't able to work in the same way. And because I was changed profoundly by his death, I had to do, first of all, a rebrand. And then when I realized I was going to have to write about what happened, which was not really surprising because I'd been writing a blog for years, so, and I like writing anyway, I published the story of what happened as Gifted by Grief, a true story of cancer, loss and rebirth. That was in 2015.
In some ways, that book was your catharsis through grief.
Yes, it was definitely. Looking back on it now, it's a very personal memoir. I was conscious that I wanted it to be full of nuggets that would help people as well, but it was basically, it was something that had to be written. It poured out of me at the time. And
I remember the journey, Jane, because I mean, I was part of your life in that journey, and I knew Philip very well. So it was amazing to see that book come out of you.
Yes, well, I think what was really surprising for me is because I wrote about quite a lot of philosophical challenges, I would say, that I'd had about my beliefs, my spiritual beliefs, my personal beliefs. And I thought that was the thing that people would like the most. But actually, I had so many readers telling me about the practical questions that I had asked Philip before he died, that meeting their requests was really what was behind the publication of my new book, which is out very shortly. It's called Before I Go, The Essential Guide to Creating a Good End of Life Plan. And it's based entirely on the questions that I asked Philip before he died, and which proved so useful to me after he was no longer there. But that is not something that I could ever in a million years have imagined. So how can you plan? You know, that was my question to myself. How can you possibly plan? And while I think that plans have a place, I also think that holding them in some irreverence can also be very healthy. Yeah.
And with the same token, you're asking people to plan for their own demise or their own leaving as such. So there is an element of planning.
Of course there is. But actually what a plan does right now is comfort and soothe the mind right now, because the mind likes to know what is going to happen, or it likes to think that it knows what's going to happen. And we live our lives that way. All of us do. That's sort of normal and natural. And then something comes along that we hadn't planned for, and everything gets thrown up in the air. So while the book itself is encouraging people to create a plan, which is important from the point of view of people left behind after you die, it has to be done, I wouldn't say tongue in cheek, but it has to be done understanding that it may not happen like this, because of course we have no clue when we are going to die, how it's going to happen, what is the effect going to be, other than we know that people will be grieving and there will be a body to deal with. And that's what we go into in the book.
It is fascinating, this, because most people live life as that with no consideration that it will end.
Yes.
There's a friend, okay, a past podcast guest, Danny, who was on sometime earlier this year. He literally in the last 48 hours, he was involved. He was in the earthquake in Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
He literally arrived with his wife. He left his children in Bali. He arrived with his wife at a hotel in Lombok to meet some family there for literally a 24-hour, 48-hour visit. And they walked into the hotel and put their bag down, and the earth started to shake.
Oh.
You know, and from like, you know, he had 48 hours of wondering if he was going to see his kids again.
Oh, God.
You know, and so, yeah, he's only just, he's about 32, 33, I think. He's not that, he's quite a young man by my perspective. He's quite a young man. But I think that's going to change him. I think that experience is going to totally change his perspective in life.
Yes, I don't think you can have a brush with death of that kind without your life and your perspective on life completely changing. And one of the effects, obviously, is that you become much more appreciative of the fragility of life, actually. And even though we behave, human beings, I should say, behave as if their life is never going to end, it's not actually like that. For most people, of course, they go on until their 80s or 90s or whatever it is. But people do die all the time. And it's natural as well, just like it is in the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom or whatever. We are also a part of nature, and we die as well.
I think it's interesting, though, is that I think we have taken death out of our lives in some ways. I mean, if you go back 100 years, people probably died all the time and everyone was dealing with death on a daily basis because it just happened around them.
Yes, that's right. And that's one of the effects of our modern world is that we don't deal with death. And as a result of that, we've become ignorant, understandably, because the medical profession and the funeral director profession have taken those aspects that once would have been part of our families, they've taken them over. Well, we've given them over as well. We're all in this together. And the result, though, is that is led to, in Western society at least, generally speaking, people more afraid of death than not wanting to talk about it, definitely denying that it's ever going to happen, not therefore taking care of the fact that it's a good idea to have a will or to think about how people are going to manage after they're not there anymore, or the effect of having had a life of, say, 80 years or 70 years or whatever it is, and all the stuff that's left as a result, including a body. So there's quite a lot to think about once you start investigating, which is what I discovered.
Yes, of course. Yes, I appreciate that. There's a lot to think about. So this idea of prepping for leaving, mm-hmm. I guess in some ways, do you find it brings more value to life that you've got?
I think when you consider any aspect of your life of yourself as you know yourself not being here anymore, which is a scary thing to do, let's admit it, it is a scary thing to do, or it can be, then a natural companion to that is to look at what you do have right now and to feel appreciative of it. Not everybody does that. Because people can get stuck in, I wish it had been more. Like, for example, when somebody is diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, there can be all sorts of ranges of reaction from fury that it's happening at all, denial that it's happening at all, to acceptance, to refusal of treatment in terms of that accepting what is happening and going with that, wanting to have quality of life be more important than quantity. Mm-hmm. Now, the benefit when you think about that sort of thing by asking yourself the question, if I had died yesterday, what would I have wanted to be happening? Which is a really good question. I'm going to say it again, because usually we say, what would happen if I die, in next week, say. It's really hard to imagine that because, we have such busy lives. How can we possibly imagine that it just comes to an end? But if you turn it around the other way and say, what would it be like if I had died yesterday? What would have happened? You wouldn't be here anymore. So what effects would happen to those around you, to your business, to your clients, to your children, whatever it is? Then it becomes a bit more, right, okay, well, I'm here now. Let's do. And some of the things that will come up will be things like, let's not put off what we think we can do now. Let's take that trip that we were planning to have. Let's actually do it because we don't know what's going to happen. Let's put in place our will, which we've been meaning to do for ages and we haven't got around to doing it. Let's do that as a first step towards taking care of what might of lessening the effect if something untoward should happen unexpectedly.
I guess this is something that is much easier, I guess, or much more in the mind for people of our age. I mean, I'm saying our age because we're both over the 50 point.
Yeah. Well,
And I think it is much harder for someone in their like 20s and 30s to even consider this.
Yes, I think you're right. And I was like that as well in my 20s or 30s. I can remember thinking that I wasn't ever going to die. And it was so far away in my conception that it was irrelevant in a way, which is not actually a very responsible attitude to take because young people do die as well. However, mm-hmm. when you get to sort of 50 plus or whatever, usually you have some parents that are coming towards the end of their lives, say from 70 onwards or whatever. Probably for people in their 70s, it doesn't necessarily feel like the end of their lives, but actually it is beginning to approach. And that means that you get to deal with it through them. And it's hard to do that and not consider that actually you're going to be in this position one day as well, maybe.
I suppose for people, for younger people listening to this, it's actually quite worth thinking about in terms of your parents.
Definitely, definitely.
In terms of, because I know, all right, I am an older person. I put my hands up. I can't help that one. But my father did die this last year, and I walked into his house, and there were two shockers. One was the pool of blood on the lounge floor where he had laid. That was one thing. That was a bit of a shock, a bit real, to suddenly see this on the floor and think, shit, he did lie there for a while. That was one shocker. And then also the amount of stuff. This was a little two-bedroom bungalow in Essex, and it was packed to the gunnels with stuff.
Yeah.
Much of which I had no idea what to do with. Now, admittedly, we did get rid of loads of it to charities and this, that and the other, but it still left us with a pile of stuff, and a lot of it went straight into a skip. You know, and it has made me recognise my own hoarding tendencies as I look around this office here and see the crap around it that shouldn't be in here. You know, it's like, so yes, you know, as a young person, if you've got parents with lots of stuff, bear in mind, you might be having a conversation with them, because if they don't deal with it, you will be.
Yes, and also, if you're the one dealing with your own stuff, you know, I can promise you, a lot of that stuff will go out in a skip or to the dump or whatever it is, just like what you did, because if people left behind, if they don't know the meaning of the precious things that you have, if they don't know the stories attached to them, there's absolutely no reason for them to keep the stuff, because they already have enough of their own anyway, because that's one of the things that happens when you're alive. You accumulate things, understandably. But so you don't need any more. So, helping if you're in the position, if you're an older person and you're thinking about this, that's fantastic. And actually, there's a word for it these days, which is called death cleaning. It's decluttering at a certain sort of age. That's basically what it is. Taking care of the precious things that you have, making sure that the ones that you really care about go to somebody who will also care about them. That can be very comforting in your older age. Releasing some of the other stuff that you don't need already, because somebody is going to have to deal with it just like you had to do. Now, some people will say they don't care about that. And, you know, that's fine. You can't make people do this sort of thing. But
I think the saddest thing for me about the whole episode of my dad's leaving is the photographs. Mm. There are piles of photographs that are fascinating pictures, and I'd love to know who the people were.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't take the action now, and that applies to anybody with any kind of photographs, whether they're on your computer or your phone or they're actual physical things, you need to, at the very least, put in dates and names. But again, that's not going to mean anything unless there's a context for it. And that's why the storytelling is so important. And that's a part of the work that we do.
So, Jane, you know, this is a new business for you, or a new kind of venture for you, and it's only a couple of years old. So it's like, and as I said at the beginning of this conversation, you're very passionate about things. I knew you were passionate about your previous work that you did, which was Wild Wisdom, and I think before that was even Rich Thinking. So I knew that you were very passionate about these things. So where is your passion now, and how does that manifest?
It's, you know, I was thinking about this question. It's like I've always been passionate about whatever it is that I'm doing. This time round, it feels different. This time round, it feels like Before I Go Solutions as an entity has taken me by the scruff of my neck and is directing me somehow. I know it sounds a bit mad. I don't really understand how that works, but it does feel like I am being presented with things that I have to follow, as opposed to me deciding where we're going to go. And the result of...
Do you think it's a vocation?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, ask me this 10 years earlier and I wouldn't have been able to say this at all. Even maybe 3 years, you know, before Ango Solutions is only 18 months old. So, and there's been a lot of changes.
I guess vocation evolves, doesn't it? Vocation must evolve, I guess, as we do.
Yes. And for some people, for others, they will be clear about something in their 20s and they will pursue that career or that path right through the whole of their life. I used to be envious of those sorts of people because I've had lots of different manifestations of a, whether it would be a vocation or not, I don't know, but passions, let's say. So I think, yes, it can develop. And certainly for me, it's clear that I'm a late blossomer in my 60s. You know, here I am. I feel like the blossoming is happening now. Much as I might have wanted it to happen before, it wasn't really.
Well, as I said in the beginning, I've always seen you passionate everything you do. But I guess this one, I guess the difference is in this vocation, from my perspective, seeing you, is this one is so grounded in something that is so big.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it?
Your previous things I've watched you, you know, have been valid projects, but they've been valid projects for a particular type of person or particular type of people.
Yeah, and there is a big vision.
This one, everyone is relevant to this. Everyone's going to die.
Yeah, that's right. And from a marketing point of view, that's definitely not the right thing to think about, you know. And so I do market to people who tend to be like 55 plus, because that is the age range where most people are going to be thinking about this sort of thing. But of course, yes, it applies to absolutely
everyone. But it's interesting, as you say, people, you know, I understand why you market from 55, you know, 50 plus in a way, because I know when I turned 50, it was a turning point for me. I recognized that I had hit the half century. There was possibly a half century left and possibly less. I, you know, my mother died at 59, and as I approach her death age, it makes me realize that I could go at 59.
Yeah.
My father died at nearly 90. So I've got somewhere between 59 and 90 is my target. but, you know, once I hit that point, I recognized that I need to start taking more responsibility for things, particularly my health.
Yeah.
And I am now more healthy than I have ever been in my life.
Yeah.
So, and that's purely as a result of this turning point, you know. And yes, yeah, I have your materials and I am in the process of working out my own plans, much as you give me a poke in the ribs every time I talk about it.
Well, I have to do that with everyone, actually, Paul, and it's normal, and I have to do it with myself as well. It's like none of us want to look at this kind of stuff. Even though we all know that it needs to be done, it's not something that we want to do because it's uncomfortable. It really is uncomfortable. But yeah. But actually, let me just, you mentioned younger people just a bit earlier, and I wanted to say a couple of things about that, because yes, it's important that younger people look at this sort of stuff maybe through their parents or for their parents, but it's also really important if you've got especially children under age of 18, because if you don't have a will in place that states who's going to be their guardian if you and your partner should die, or if you're a single parent, if you should die, then it's the law that decides who's going to look after your child. And that's pretty alarming once you think about it. So to all the younger people listening, I would really encourage you to get an appointment with a solicitor and get that sorted out.
Yes, I'm aware that there are some strange laws about that, and particularly if you're not married, actually. When my son was on the way, my partner at the time, looked at the implications of this and realised that had anything happened to my wife during the birth, I would actually not have any say in anything. It would be my now mother-in-law, who would have a say. So it was interesting that, you know, the law will move to that member of the family. So yeah, there's quite a lot of grey areas around partnerships and stuff. So if you haven't got these things in place, it can cause quite a lot of problems later.
Exactly. And, you know, it can be slightly different in all sorts of different countries and different states. So you need to check it out. What is the law in your locality? Very important.
So we said passion. So I clearly you have a passion for this work. I mean, it kind of found you. So,
yes.
I mean, have you lost your passion before? Have you regained passion? How has passion been for you in your life?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I was thinking about this as well, and actually I've always had an attitude of being able to turn adverse circumstances into positive ones. And so I don't think I ever have lost my passion. It might have been mislaid temporarily from time to time, but I've always, because I have that ability to find the good in whatever situation it is that I am in, not as a way of avoiding the unpleasant feelings that come with something that you don't want to have happen, but as an after effect of having felt those feelings. So let me try and explain that a little bit better. I really understood this in the wake of Philip dying, because the one thing that I knew in a sea of complete and utter uncertainty and discombobulation was that I just needed to let the feelings be there whenever they came to visit. And I can tell you, all different types of feelings came to visit. That's how I really experienced what I knew intellectually, which was that if a feeling comes knocking on the door, let's say fear comes knocking on the door, our automatic instinct is to shut the door and pull down the blinds and keep it out. But if it's come, it's coming for a purpose. And actually what we need to do is open the front door, throw open the windows, open the back door of the house as well, so that it can come in and it can go easily. And that's what I learned to do. And in respect to Philip's death, and that's how I learned that when you allow that process to happen, which is a natural process, then there is space for being able to see the blessings in your life as well. And I think that's one of the reasons why within the first week of after Philip dying, I had a very perplexing at the time, but I had a few moments of sheer happiness when I was just out walking one day in the woods. I couldn't understand it because I was going home to an empty house. I knew there was going to be nobody there. And of course, this feeling passed. I was catapulted into other ones again, but I did understand that there was room for it all if I was willing to allow it to be there, and then to be also able to find the blessing, which I have to say, it took me quite a time to find a blessing in Philip dying. That did not happen for quite a long time, and that was okay as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is never having been in quite that location, that process, I don't fully understand it, but I did witness your journey, or some of your journey, certainly.
I can
understand that. And as I said, I think that book, the book you wrote, was clearly your catharsis for grief, and I saw that happen to you. So obviously this has changed over time. So success. Now, I mean, that is a very loaded word, success, because we were always told, and I think probably you were as well, we were always told success was the do well at school, do well at college, get the degree, get a good job, find a partner, settle down, have a family, buy a house, have a nice car. That was the classic thing of success that we were all sold.
Yeah.
And
yes,
I know it's not true. I have got some of those trappings, not all of them. And I recognize for me, it doesn't always feel quite as fulfilling. So what is success? Because for me, I have different views on success, and I will share them if you want. But what is your view of success?
I think it's a made up construct that gets us into a lot of trouble. That's what I think. So, for example, if you're thinking that you have to be successful, then there must be the opposite, which is that you're unsuccessful. And if your thinking is that you're can only be happy when you're successful, i.e. when you've got what you think represents success, which, as you've so well described there, that's the very common factors in success, then it means that if you haven't got those things, then you're being a failure, which is the opposite. And it's just not like that. My belief about success now is much less about what's out there and what is happening out there, and much more about how at peace you are inside. if I was going to use that word at all, I would be qualifying it as that now. I didn't always feel like this, of course. But
when
that
you
is...
opened the conversation, you said you were in the alternative sector and successful.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well done for picking up on that. Well, I was successful in the outer ways of the world. Like, I had enough money coming in, plenty of money coming in, had plenty of clients. I was well known. I was respected. I had published my first book, which is now out of print. That was way back in 1997, before the internet even existed, or at least in my world. That was actually, that had happened as a result of what could have been termed a failure, because I was 40 something or other at that time. I had come to terms with the fact that I was not going to be having children for various different reasons, which felt like a failure. And I was moved to write the first book, as I said. But the reason for that was because I wanted to make a contribution in the world. If I wasn't going to have a child to leave behind, I was going to have a book. Mm. Now I look back and I see there was quite a lot of egotistical thinking there. And it was understandable. It was, you know, there wasn't anything wrong with it. But I don't think like that now. There's a much quieter success, I would say, for me, if I was going to term it that way, is a much quieter, more peaceful, contented feeling inside, which can be there regardless of what's going on the outside.
That's a nice answer. Yeah, I wonder if it's a factor of age, this. I wonder if success changes as we get older. And from a lot of the conversations I have, it does seem to.
Yeah, I think so, because with enough years behind you and enough trying to make it happen and things like that, you begin to get a bit wiser about what really is very important. And, you know, again, one of the results of Philip dying was that I suddenly realised, oh my God, this could happen to me too. And therefore, it became incredibly important that everything that I was doing was something that I was finding enjoyable in one way or another, whether that be sitting on my own at home alone. And it wasn't always enjoyable, I can tell you, but there was a difference between being on my own and grieving, and being on my own and knowing that I needed to do that, and trying not to be on my own and moving away from those feelings. So, I've lost my train of thought there, I'm afraid. Never mind.
No, but I understand what you mean in terms of you're happy with yourself, and success doesn't necessarily mean to be doing something. It can just be contentment.
Very much so. Very much so.
You see, it does make me wonder what motivates people like Elon Musk, mm-hmm. who's happy to spend millions and millions and millions with a view to sending people to Mars. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can imagine it's incredibly exciting when you're involved in that, but whether I could take the pressure of the question, no. But yeah, it does make you wonder what motivates people like that. But you and I are never going to answer that one. I think I need to interview him. Perhaps I should put a request in.
Yeah, why not? It would be interesting to find out. But, you know, he's passionate about that. I'm passionate about what I do. It doesn't really matter in a way what people are passionate about, so long as it's, I would say, something that is making a contribution that is to the good. Now, people, of course, will have their opinions about that. But generally speaking, and I've had some people say, you make comments like on Facebook and things like that, you know, how... they haven't quite put it like this, but they're upset enough to be confronted with death to make some negative comments, put it that way. Can't please anybody.
Yes, I can imagine you would. I can imagine some people, you would conflict with some people's view of the world. I can imagine.
It's yeah.
How could you possibly even think about this? Yes, I can imagine that. And yeah, but that's other people's fear talking. It's clearly.
Yeah.
And again, back to this problem that the West doesn't deal with death very well.
Yeah, exactly. And we only don't deal with it very well because we've been hidden from it for such a long time now. And that's really what my work is about. My passion.
That amazing video on Facebook recently, I think you may have shared it on your thing, about that Irish guy talking about how his father died and
yeah.
how how the village came by and they held this man to his, then they called him to his death by singing. I mean, it's a very Catholic thing, but I mean, you know, you could really feel how this man was cradled into his death. And then when the death is over, you know, the body was in the house and everybody came to visit, and how the professional wailers, the women here, controlled the emotion of the room by crying and making sounds and doing keening. It's like, it sounds excruciatingly painful to me, because it's like, I can't believe that would be so awful. But I can imagine it is the process that they've learnt, that they used.
Yeah, and because it's a known process in that tradition and in that country, there is a safety in that. People will have been brought up with that, will have understood that that's the way that it happens, generally speaking, this is. And therefore, there's an expectation of what will happen next and what will happen next. And yes, that then provides a safe container for the huge amount of emotion that there is. And I've never been to a funeral like that, but that particular video that you're talking about was very powerful. And I think it's partly because it addresses the underlying need that we have to bring death back out of the closet, so to speak, to have it be a normal part of life, and that ties in with my passion, which is to have end of life plans become as common as birth plans. And I mean, really, my real passion is that Before I Go Solutions wouldn't need to exist anymore, because everybody's talking about it and doing their plans and it's normal. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, wouldn't it be amazing if people live life as if they meant it? That's the point, isn't it?
Yes, it would be. It would be. And we understandably, sometimes we waste it.
No, there are days when the duvet is only good enough to be under the duvet. I agree. There are days when there are duvet days. But, you know, when they're not duvet days, we should be living life to the full.
Yeah, and duvet days have their place as well, so long as you go fully into having a duvet day and don't spend half of it feeling guilty about having one.
Okay, we've been talking for a while now. So here's my question. This is the question I ask all my guests. And the reason it's here, this question, is so that when you put the phone down from this, you don't go, oh, I wish I'd said so-and-so. So is there anything that I should have asked you that I haven't?
Well, there's probably loads of things like that. I could talk about this subject for hours, but...
So what is it that you would like to say? What is it you'd like to leave people with then, if you have the choice?
I think I would issue a dare. And the dare is to contemplate the idea that you will one day become old, perhaps like your parents or your grandparents. It will happen. And if you were to contemplate that now, including the question, what would happen to the people around me or to my business or whatever it is, if I had died yesterday, what one action would you take to lessen the impact, the practical impact on people? Because, you know, I am all about action. Of course I want people to buy my books and to take my courses and do all the rest of it. But why do I do all this? It's not so that people can buy a book and have it on their bookshelf and feel good for that reason, or even feel guilty for that reason. It's because I want them to take action. I really want people to get their act together and to do the process. And you mentioned that earlier. It is a process. It does take time, because you have to have conversations with people. You have to be willing to have the conversations in the first place, which can be awkward. And you have to make decisions, hard decisions, about what you think you might want to have coming towards the end of your life, for example. What kind of treatment you might not want to have. These are not easy questions. They can't be answered just out of the blue one afternoon. Not until you've given some thought.
But they might change as well. They might change, won't they, as well? It's like, I think I was on one of your programs, on your program, and one of the questions you asked is about, at what point do you want to stop living? I think it was like, and it was like, well, if you can't speak, if you can't communicate in any way. And they are like, ooh, they are quite tough decisions, aren't they, really? And you're kind of thinking of like, you know, yeah, like, well, how would you communicate if you couldn't communicate?
Exactly.
You think of that,
And that's why nobody wants to think about it, which is why it's a better idea to think about it has happened already. So that can help to break through that. But it's valuable. It's really valuable because one of the things that's happening nowadays is that people are getting older, much older, but not necessarily in very good health. So the whole issue of quality of life versus quantity becomes very important. And if you don't state ideally what you want in an ideal world, if you don't state that really clearly, written down, communicated to everybody who needs to know, which is not just family, but the medical people and your therapists or whoever it is that is important in your life in this way, if you don't state what your intentions are, then what will happen is that you will get kept alive because that's what we've been trained to do. The medics will keep you alive. If you ring 911 or 999 in the UK and the ambulance comes out, those people are trained to do whatever it is that they have to do to keep you alive. Now,
yeah, I have a friend who a London friend from years, and her father had a stroke or had a heart attack, and they weren't sure at that point whether he was whether his swallow response would return or not, and so the decision was taken to put a peg into his stomach, and so that was done. And not that they saw, well, all right, it's a very double-edged sword, because the man who was her father died at that point. The man that came back was never her father. He was someone else. And then he died some years later, so as far as she's concerned, she lost her father twice. And that's because they obviously had no agreement at that point what should have happened to him. Because peg should not have been put into his stomach. He should not have been, his life should not have been prolonged.
That's right. But it was done because that is the way that our medical professionals are trained, which is fair enough. And unless there is something, a legal document in place, which will be the advance directive or advance healthcare decision, whatever it's called in your country, unless that is in place, then that will happen, the situation that you described, which means that you have to be willing to face up to these awkward questions. And that's why I'm daring people, your listeners, to do something about this now. Just one step, one small step, which might be just ringing up a solicitor to make an appointment, or it might be looking at a website about advanced directives, or it might be having a conversation with your adult child about how they want, do they want to have a burial or a cremation or something else?
Oh, fascinating stuff. It is fascinating stuff. It's like it's such a big subject. And so
yes,
my final question to all of my guests is, for you, you know, from all that you've said now, from up to this point here, what is the meaning of life?
Yeah, that's a good one. I love that. Well, you know, I can remember asking when I was about 35, asking my husband that, because it was very important to me to know about the meaning of life. I felt it very important. It always has been, to discover the meaning behind life since I was a teenager. And I asked him this, and he took some time and he pondered and he said, well, I think it's to enjoy it. And I was absolutely furious. I was like, how can it be as simple as that? That can't be true. You must be mad. I was really angry that he wasn't taking me seriously. And I have to say that actually now I think I agree with him. That, and that is, when I say to enjoy life, what I really mean by that is I'm not talking about the enjoyment that you get from maybe going out and getting, you know, having a few too many to drink, that kind of enjoyment. I'm talking about the kind of innocent, more tender enjoyment that comes simply from being authentically with another person, from having an intimate conversation, from noticing the beautiful rose that is just outside your house and taking the moment to bend down and smell the smell, or from feeling that, yes, you can take a couple of hours out of your day and go for a walk on the beach and feel the wind on your face and the sand beneath your toes. That's what I mean. That sort of quality of enjoyment.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I can really relate to that. As I've come to understand from doing this podcast, for me now, the meaning of life is whatever you give it.
Yes.
But it's But it's really nice to hear other people's take on it. And yes, I do really appreciate that one.
Great.
So Jane, this is the point. Obviously, you've got a book coming out in the UK next week. So, you know, it's we're now at the 8th of August. And so your book is available on the...
The book is actually available. No, book is available from the 9th of August in all bookshops and things like that. I'm having a launch party locally on the 15th of August. But yes, it's available from the 9th. And before I go, The Essential Guide to Creating a Good End of Life Plan. If you like to have a choice, it's not only available on Amazon, it's available everywhere. And it's a nice mixture of description about the thinking that goes behind the questions and then the questions that you need to answer, the thinking behind those and why you need to do it and what they are.
And yes, my story, my decluttering story.
Your decluttering story is in there in full glory.
Jane, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Is there anything else? I'll put your website links and things on the thing, of course, and I'll find the Amazon link for the book.
Great.
So that'll be on the page as well. But it's all to be there. But if there's any of the other links you want to put out, please let me have them, and I will. So thank you, Jane. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Yeah, and I know we're friends, but this is such nice to talk on this subject, and it's just been a joy to do.
Thank you. How wonderful. I love it that joy is that word is associated with death. In fact, the last thing that I might just say is that the word enjoy is the most commonly used word by people on my courses to describe the experience that they've had, that they've actually enjoyed it. And that really means a lot to me. So thank you.
But that's what you said, isn't it? When you and Philip sat down and did this process, you were putting it off. And actually, when you sat down and did it, you actually had some real fun.
We did. It was really a most amazing experience.
And he was quite ill at the time.
Yeah, he was only a few months away from dying, and we knew that. But it felt like our last project together, but it was even more poignant for that reason. And it was a morning of incredible closeness and connection and loving. Oh my God, so loving.
Anyway, without wanting to open this conversation up again, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your time. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Jane Duncan Rogers. If you'd like to catch up with the resources that Jane discussed in the programme, please head over to the website at the bottom of the podcast. You'll find links to all of the things mentioned on the programme. So life, passion and business is changing. We're moving away from the reflective place that we've been for the last 6 months and moving out to provide more resources to you so that you can find passion and meaning for yourself. So check out the website. There is a 5-day challenge coming soon. And check out the Facebook pages and you'll find more information about it there. Anyway, thanks for listening and I hope to catch you later.